Nampo Yoichibe spoke up.
There's no question about your ability. We all have confidence in that, but still...
But still what? What's on your mind?
Well, your brother seems to be of the opinion that Musashi isn't important.
He's right, isn't he?
Think of the risk.
Risk?
Howled Denshichiro.
I didn't mean it that way. I take it back, stammered Yoichibe.
But the damage was done. Denshichiro, jumping up and seizing him by the scruff of the neck, threw him violently against the wall.
Get out of here, coward!
It was a slip of the tongue. I didn't mean to...
Shut up! Out! Weaklings aren't fit to drink with me!
Yoichibe turned pale, then quietly sank to his knees, facing the others.
I thank you all for letting me stay among you so long, he said simply.
He went to the small Shinto shrine in the back of the room, bowed, and left. Without so much as a glance in his direction, Denshichiro said,
Now, let's all drink together. After that, I want you to find Musashi. I doubt that he's left Kyoto yet. He's probably swaggering around town, boasting of his victory. And another thing, we're going to put some life back into this dojo. I want each of you to practice hard and see that your fellow students do too. As soon as I've had a rest, I'll start practicing myself. And remember one thing, I'm not soft like my brother. I want even the youngest to go at it for all they're worth.
Exactly a week later, one of the younger students came running into the dojo with the news.
I found him!
Denshichiro, true to his word, had been training relentlessly day after day. His seemingly inexhaustible energy came as a surprise to the disciples, a group of whom were now watching him take care of Otaguro, one of the most experienced among them, as though he were a child.
We'll stop now,
said Denshichiro, withdrawing his sword and sitting down at the edge of the practice area.
You say you found him?
Yes.
The student came and knelt before Denshichiro.
Where?
East of Jisoin, in Honami Lane. Musashi's staying at the house of Honami Koetsu. I'm sure of it.
Strange. How would a rustic like Musashi get to know a man like Koetsu?
I don't know, but that's where he is.
All right, let's go after him. Now!
Barked Denshichiro, striding off to make his preparations.
Otaguro and Ueda, trailing along behind, tried to dissuade him.
Taking him by surprise would make it look like a common brawl. People would disapprove, even if we carried it off.
Never mind. Etiquette is for the dojo. In a real battle, he who wins, wins.
True, but that isn't the way that oaf defeated your brother. Don't you think it would be more befitting a swordsman to send him a letter specifying the time and place, then beat him fair and square?
Maybe you're right. All right, we'll do it that way. In the meantime, I don't want any of you to let my brother talk you into opposing me. I'll fight Musashi whatever Seijudo or anybody else says.
We've gotten rid of all the men who disagreed with you, as well as the ingrates who wanted to leave.
Good. We're that much stronger. We have no need of crooks like Gion Toji or timid souls like Nampo Yoichibe.
Should we mention it to your brother before sending the letter?
Not you, no. I'll do it myself.
As he went off toward Seijudo's room, the others prayed there wouldn't be another fraternal clash. Neither brother had budged an inch on the question of Musashi. When after a time no loud voices were heard, the students took up the matter of time and place for the second confrontation with their mortal foe. Then Denshichiro's voice rang out.
Ueda! Miike! Otaguro! All of you, come here!
Denshichiro was standing in the middle of the room with a clouded look on his face and tears in his eyes. No one had ever seen him like this.
Take a look at this, all of you!
He held up a long, long letter and said, with forced anger,
See what my idiot brother has done now. He had to tell me his opinions again, but he's gone for good. Didn't even say where he's going.
A Mother's Love. Otsu put down her sewing and called, "Who's there?" She slid open the shoji onto the veranda, but no one was in sight. Her spirit sank. She had hoped it was Jotaro. She needed him now more than ever. Another day of utter loneliness. She could not keep her mind on her needlework. Here, below Kiyomizudera, at the bottom of Sangen Hill, the streets were squalid, but behind the houses and shops were bamboo groves and small fields, camellias blooming and plum blossoms beginning to fall. Osugi was very fond of this particular inn. She stayed here whenever she was in Kyoto, and the innkeeper always let her have this small, quiet, separate house. Behind it was a stand of trees, part of the garden next door. In front was a small vegetable garden, beyond which was the always bustling kitchen of the inn.
"Otsu," called a voice from the kitchen. "It's time for lunch. May I bring it to you now?"
"Lunch?" said Otsu. "I'll eat with the old woman when she comes back.
She said she wouldn't be back until late. We probably won't see her before evening."
"I'm not hungry."
"I don't see how you can go on eating so little."
Pine smoke billowed into the enclosure from potter's kilns in the neighborhood. On the days when they were fired, there was always a lot of smoke. But after the air cleared, the early spring sky was bluer than ever. From the street came the sound of horses and the footsteps and voices of pilgrims on their way to the temple. It was from the passers-by that the story of Musashi's victory over Seijuro had reached Otsu's ears. Musashi's face appeared before her eyes.
"Jotaro must have been at the Lendaiji that day," she thought. "If only he'd come and tell me about it."
She couldn't believe the boy had looked for her and not been able to find her. 20 days had passed, and he knew she was staying at the foot of Sanen Hill. He might be sick, but she did not really believe this either. Jotaro was not the type to be ill.
"He's probably out flying a kite somewhere, having a good time," she said to herself.
The idea made her a little peevish. Maybe he was the one who was doing the waiting. She had not been back to the Karasumaru house, though she had promised him she would return soon. She was unable to go anywhere, for she had been forbidden to leave the inn without Osugi's permission. Osugi had obviously told the innkeeper and servants to keep an eye on her. Whenever she so much as glanced toward the street, someone would ask, "Are you going out, Otsu?" The question, the tone of voice, sounded innocent, but she comprehended the meaning. And the only way she could send a letter was by entrusting it to the people at the inn, who had been instructed to keep any message she might try to send. Osugi was something of a celebrity in this area, and people were easily persuaded to do her bidding. Quite a few of the shopkeepers, palanquin bearers, and draymen in the neighborhood had seen her in action the year before, when she challenged Musashi at Kiyomizudera, and, for all her irascibility, regarded her with a certain affectionate awe. As Otsu made yet another attempt to finish reassembling Osugi's travel outfit, which had been taken apart at the seams to be washed, a shadow appeared outside. She heard an unfamiliar voice say,
"I wonder if I'm in the wrong place."
A young woman had come through the passageway from the street and was standing under a plum tree between two patches of scallions. She seemed nervous, a little embarrassed, but reluctant to turn back.
"Isn't this the inn? There's a lantern at the entrance of the passageway saying it is," she said to Otsu.
Otsu could hardly believe her eyes, so painful was the suddenly reawakened memory. Thinking she had made a mistake, Akemi asked diffidently,
"Which building is the inn?"
Then, looking around, she noticed the plum blossoms and exclaimed,
"My, aren't they pretty?"
Otsu looked at the girl without answering. A clerk, summoned by one of the kitchen girls, came hurrying around the corner of the inn.
"Are you looking for the entrance?" he asked.
Yes.
It's on the corner, just to the right of the passageway.
The inn faces directly on the street?
It does, but the rooms are quiet.
I'd like a place where I can come and go without people watching me. I thought the inn was away from the street. Isn't that little house part of the inn?
Yes.
It looks like a nice, quiet place.
We also have some very nice rooms in the main building.
There seems to be a woman staying there now, but couldn't I stay too?
Well, there's another lady. I'm afraid she's old and rather nervous.
Oh, I don't mind, if it's all right with her.
I'll have to ask her when she comes back. She's out now.
May I have a room to rest in till then?
By all means. The clerk led Akemi down the passageway, leaving Otsu to regret that she had not taken the opportunity to ask a few questions. If only she could learn to be a little more aggressive, she reflected sadly. To assuage her jealous suspicions, Otsu had assured herself time and time again that Musashi was not the kind of man who played around with other women. But ever since that day, she had been discouraged. She's had more opportunities to be near Musashi. She's probably much cleverer than I. Knows better how to win a man's heart. Until that day, the possibility of another woman had never crossed her mind. Now she brooded over what she considered to be her own weaknesses. I'm just not beautiful. I'm not very bright either. I have neither parents nor relatives to back me in marriage. Comparing herself with other women, it seemed that the great hope of her life was ridiculously beyond her reach, that it was presumptuous to dream that Musashi could be hers. She could no longer summon up the bravery that had enabled her to climb the old cryptomeria tree during a blinding storm. "If only I had Jotaro's help," she lamented. She even imagined she had lost her youthfulness. At the Shippoji, I still had some of the innocence Jotaro has now. That was why I was able to free Musashi. She began to weep into her sewing.
"Are you here, Otsu?" Osugi asked imperiously. "What are you doing, sitting there in the dark?"
Twilight had descended without the girls noticing it.
"Oh, I'll light a lamp right away," she said apologetically, rising and going to a small room in the rear.
As she came in and sat down, Osugi cast a cold look at Otsu's back. Otsu placed the lamp by Osugi's side and bowed.
"You must be worn out," she said. "What did you do today?"
"You should know without asking."
"Shall I massage your legs for you?"
"My legs aren't so bad, but my shoulders have been stiff the last 4 or 5 days. Probably the weather. If you feel like it, massage them a little."
To herself, she was saying that she had to put up with this dreadful girl only a little while longer, until she found Matahachi and got him to set right the evils of the past. Otsu knelt behind her and started to work on her shoulders.
"They're really stiff, aren't they? It must hurt to breathe."
"It does feel as though my chest is clogged up sometimes, but I'm old. One of these days I'll probably have some sort of seizure and die."
"Oh, that's not going to happen to you. You've got more vitality than most young people."
"Maybe, but think of Uncle Gong. He was as lively as could be, but then it was all over in an instant. People don't know what's going to happen to them. There's no mistake about one thing, though. All I have to do to be myself is think about Musashi."
"You're wrong about Musashi. He's not a wicked man."
"Yes, yes, that's right," said the old woman with a slight snort. "After all, he's the man you love so much you threw my son over for him. I shouldn't say bad things about him to you."
"Oh, it's not like that,
isn't it? You do love Musashi more than Matahachi, don't you? Why not admit it?"
Otsu was silent, and the old woman went on.
"When we find Matahachi, I'll have a talk with him and fix everything up the way you want it. But I suppose, after that, you'll run straight to Musashi, and the two of you will malign us for the rest of your lives.
Why do you think that? I'm not that kind of person. I won't forget the many things you've done for me in the past.
The way you young girls talk these days. I don't know how you manage to sound so sweet. I'm an honest woman myself. I can't conceal my feelings with a lot of clever words. You know, if you marry Musashi, you'll be my enemy. Ha ha ha! It must be annoying to massage my shoulders.
The girl did not answer.
What are you crying about?
I'm not crying.
What's that water falling on my neck?
I'm sorry. I couldn't help it.
Stop it! It feels like a bug crawling around. Quit pining over Musashi and put some strength into your arms.
A light appeared in the garden. Otsu thought it was probably the maid, who usually brought their evening meal about this time, but it turned out to be a priest.
I beg your pardon,
he said, stepping up onto the veranda.
Is this the room of the Hongiden Dowager? Ah, there you are.
The lantern he held bore the legend Kiyomizu-dera on Mount Otowa.
Let me explain, he began. I'm a priest from the Shinando, up the hill.
He put the lantern down and took a letter from his kimono.
I don't know who it was, but this evening, just before sunset, a young ronin came to the temple and asked if an elderly lady from Mimasaka was doing her devotions there. I told him no, but a devoted worshipper answering that description did come occasionally. He asked for a brush and wrote this letter. He wanted me to give it to the lady the next time she came. I'd heard that you were staying here, and since I was on my way to Gojo Avenue, I dropped in to deliver it.
That was very kind of you,
said Osugi cordially. She offered him a cushion, but he took his leave immediately.
Now what? Thought Osugi.
She unfolded the letter. As she read, her color changed.
Otsu,
she called.
Yes? What is it?
Replied the girl from the back room.
There's no need to prepare tea. He's already gone.
Has he? Why don't you drink it then?
How dare you think of serving me tea you made for him? I'm not a drain pipe. Forget about the tea and get dressed.
Are we going out?
Yes. Tonight we'll reach the settlement you've been hoping for.
Oh, then the letter was from Matachi?
That doesn't concern you.
Very well. I'll go and ask for our dinner to be brought now.
Haven't you eaten yet?
No, I was waiting for you to come back.
You're always doing foolish things. I ate while I was out. Well, have some rice and pickles, but be quick about it.
As Otsu started for the kitchen, the old woman said,
It'll be cold on the mountain tonight. Have you finished sewing up my cloak?
I still have a little more to do on your kimono.
I didn't say kimono, I said cloak. I put that out for you to work on, too. And have you washed my socks? The cords on my sandals are loose. Have some new ones brought.
The orders came so fast Otsu didn't have time to answer, let alone comply. But she felt powerless to rebel. Her spirit seemed to crouch in fear and dismay before this gnarled old harridan. Food was out of the question. In a matter of minutes, Osugi declared she was ready to leave. Placing new sandals by the veranda, Otsu said,
You go ahead. I'll catch up.
Did you bring a lantern?
No.
Nitwit! Were you expecting me to stumble around on the mountainside without a light? Go borrow one from the inn.
I'm sorry. I didn't think.
Otsu wanted to know where they were going, but did not ask, knowing it would provoke Osugi's anger. She fetched the lantern and led the way silently up Sanen Hill. For all the harassment, she felt cheerful. The letter must have been from Matahachi, and this meant the problem that had vexed her for so many years would be solved tonight. As soon as everything has been talked over, she thought, I'll go to Karasumaru House. I must see Jotaro.
It was not an easy climb. They had to walk carefully to avoid fallen rocks and holes in the path. In the deep silence of the night, the waterfall sounded louder than in the daytime. After a time, Osugi said,
"I'm sure this is the place sacred to the god of the mountain. Ah, here's the sign. Cherry Tree of the Mountain God." "Matahachi!" she called into the darkness. "Matahachi! I'm here!"
The trembling voice and face brimming with maternal affection came as a revelation to Otsu. She had never expected to see Osugi overcome by concern for her son.
"Don't let the lantern go out!" snapped Osugi.
"I'll take care," replied Otsu dutifully. The old woman grumbled under her breath.
"He's not here. He's simply not here."
She had made a round of the temple grounds, but made another one.
"He said in the letter I should come to the hall of the mountain god."
"Did he say tonight?"
"He didn't say tonight or tomorrow or any particular time. I wonder if he'll ever grow up. I don't see why he couldn't come to the inn, but maybe he's embarrassed about what happened in Osaka."
Otsu pulled at her sleeve and said,
"Shh, that could be him. Someone's coming up the hill."
"Son, is that you?"
Osugi called. The man passed them without a glance and went straight to the back of the little temple. He returned shortly and stopped beside them, staring boldly at Otsu's face. When he had first passed, she had not recognized him, but she did now. The samurai who had been sitting beneath the bridge on New Year's Day.
"Have you two just come up the hill?" asked Kojiro.
The question came so unexpectedly that neither Otsu nor Osugi answered. Their surprise was compounded by the sight of Kojiro's gaudy clothes. Pointing his finger at Otsu's face, he went on,
"I'm looking for a girl about your age. Her name's Akemi. She's a little smaller than you, and her face is a little rounder. She was trained in a tea house and acts a little old for her age. Have either of you seen her around here?"
They shook their heads in silence.
"Very peculiar. Somebody told me she'd been seen in the neighborhood. I felt sure she'd spend the night in one of the temple halls."
For all the attention he was paying to them, he might as well have been talking to himself. He mumbled a few more words, then left. Osugi clicked her tongue.
"There's another good-for-nothing. He has two swords, so I suppose he's a samurai. But did you see that outfit? And up here looking for a woman at this time of night? Well, I guess he saw it was neither of us."
Though she did not mention it to Osugi, Otsu had a strong suspicion that the girl he was searching for was the one who had wandered into the inn that afternoon. What on earth could be the tie that linked Musashi with the girl and the girl with this man?
"Let's go back,"
said Osugi, her voice both disappointed and resigned. In front of the Hongan-do, where Osugi's confrontation with Musashi had taken place, they ran into Kojiro again. He looked at them, and they at him, but no words were exchanged. Osugi watched as he went up to the Shiando, then turned away and walked straight down Sanen Hill.
"That man has scary eyes," Osugi murmured, "like Musashi."
Just then, her own eyes caught a shadowy movement and her bent shoulders jerked up.
"Oh!"
she hooted like an owl. From behind a large cryptomeria, a hand beckoned.
"Matahachi,"
murmured Osugi, thinking it was very touching that he did not want to be seen by anyone but her. She called to Otsu, now 50 or 60 feet farther down the slope.
"Go on ahead, Otsu, but not too far. Wait for me at the place they call Chirimazuka. I'll be with you in a few minutes."
"All right," said Otsu.
"Now don't go off anywhere. I've got my eye on you. You needn't try to run away."
Osugi ran swiftly to the tree.
"Matahachi, it's you, isn't it?"
"Yes, mother." His hands came out of the darkness and clasped hers, as though he had been waiting for years to see her.
"What are you doing behind this tree? My, your hands are as cold as ice."
She was almost moved to tears by her own solicitude.
"I had to hide," said Matahachi, his eyes shifting nervously. "That man who passed here a minute ago, you saw him, didn't you?" "The man with the long sword on his back?"
"Yes."
"Do you know him?"
"Sort of. That's Sasaki Kojiro."
"What? I thought you were Sasaki Kojiro."
"Huh?"
"In Osaka, you showed me your certificate. That was the name written on it. You said it was the name you'd taken, didn't you?"
"Did I? That wasn't true. Today, on my way up here, I caught sight of him. Kojiro gave me a bad time a couple of days ago, so I've been hiding to keep out of his way. If he comes back this way, I might be in trouble." Osugi was so shocked words failed her. But she noticed that Matahachi was thinner than he had been. This, and his agitated state, made her love him all the more, for the time being, at least. With a look that told him she did not want to hear the details, she said,
"All that doesn't matter. Tell me, son, did you know that Uncle Gon died?"
"Uncle Gon?"
"Yes, Uncle Gon. He died right there on the beach at Sumiyoshi just after you left us."
"I hadn't heard."
"Well, it happened. The question is whether you understand the reason for his tragic death and for my continuing this long, sad mission, even at my age."
"Yes. It's been engraved on my mind since that night in Osaka when you reminded me of my shortcomings."
"You remember that, do you? Well, I have news for you. News that'll make you happy."
"What's that?"
"It concerns Otsu."
"Oh, that was the girl with you?" Matahachi started around her, but Osugi blocked his way and asked reproachfully,
"Where do you think you're going?"
"If that was Otsu, I want to see her. It's been a long time." Osugi nodded.
"I brought her here for the purpose of letting you see her. But would you mind telling your mother just what you plan to do?"
"I'll tell her I'm sorry. I treated her very badly, and I hope she'll forgive me."
"And then?"
Then I'll tell her I'll never make a mistake like that again. You tell her that too, mother, for me."
"Then what?"
"Then it'll be just like before."
"What will?"
"Me and Otsu. I want to be friends with her again. I want to marry her. Oh, mother, do you think she's still—"
"You fool!"
She dealt him a resounding slap. He staggered back and put his hand to his stinging cheek.
Why, mother, what's the matter?"
he stammered. Osugi, looking angrier than he had ever seen her since the day he was weaned, growled,
"You just now assured me you'd never forget what I said in Osaka, didn't you?"
He hung his head.
"Did I ever say a word about apologizing to that worthless bitch? How could you conceivably beg forgiveness from that she-monster after she threw you over and went off with another man? You'll see her, all right, but apologize you shall not. Now listen to me."
Osugi collared him with both hands and shook him back and forth. Matahachi, head bobbing, closed his eyes and listened meekly to a long string of angry rebukes.
"What's this?"
she screamed.
"You're crying? Do you still love that tramp enough to weep over her? If you do, you're no son of mine."
As she threw him to the ground, she collapsed too. For several minutes, both of them sat there and wept. But Osugi's bitterness could not stay submerged for long. Straightening up, she said,
"You've reached a point where you must make a decision. I may not live much longer. And when I'm dead, you won't be able to talk with me like this, even if you want to. Think, Matahachi. Otsu's not the only girl in the world."
Her voice became calmer.
You mustn't let yourself feel any attachment to someone who's acted the way she has. Find a girl you like, and I'll get her for you, even if I have to visit her parents 100 times, even if it wears me out and I die.
He remained sullen and silent.
Forget about Otsu, for the sake of the Hongiden name. Whatever you think, she's unacceptable from the family's viewpoint. So if you absolutely cannot do without her, then cut off this old head of mine. After that, you can do as you please. But so long as I'm alive... Mother, stop!
The virulence of his tone made her bristle.
You have your nerve shouting at me!
Just tell me this. Is the woman I marry to be my wife or yours?
What a silly thing to say. Why can't I choose by myself? Now, now, you're always saying headstrong things. How old do you think you are? You're not a child anymore, or have you forgotten?
But, well, even if you are my mother, you're asking too much of me. It's not fair.
Their disagreements were often like this, beginning with a violent clash of emotions, a locking of horns in implacable antagonism. Mutual understanding was undermined before it ever had a chance to grow.
It's not fair?
Osugi hissed.
Whose son do you think you are? Whose belly do you think you came from? There's no point talking about that. I want to marry Otsu. She's the one I love.
Unable to endure his mother's ashen scowl, he directed his words to the sky.
Son, do you mean that?
Osugi drew her short sword and pointed the blade at her throat.
Mother, what are you doing?
I've had enough. Don't try to stop me. Just have the decency to give me the final blow.
Don't do this to me. I'm your son. I can't stand here and let you do that.
All right. Will you give up Otsu right now?
If that's what you wanted me to do, why did you bring her here?
Why tantalize me by parading her in front of me? I don't understand you. Well, it'll be simple enough for me to kill her, but you're the one she's wronged. As your mother, I thought I should leave her punishment for you to carry out. It seems to me you should be grateful for that.
You expect me to kill Otsu?
Don't you want to? If you don't, say so, but make up your mind.
But, mother...
So you still can't get over her, huh? Well, if that's the way you feel, you're not my son, and I'm not your mother. If you can't cut off that hussy's head, at least cut mine off. The final blow, please.
Children, Matahachi reflected, are wont to make trouble for their parents, but sometimes it is the other way around. Osugi wasn't simply browbeating him. She'd thrust him into the most difficult situation in his life. The wild look on her face shook him to the core.
Mother, stop! Don't do it! All right, I'll do what you want. I'll forget about Otsu. Is that all? I'll punish her. I promise to punish her with my own hands. You'll kill her?
Yes, I'll kill her.
Osugi triumphantly burst into tears of joy. Putting away her sword, she clutched her son's hand.
Good for you. Now you sound like the future head of the House of Hongiden. Your ancestors will be proud of you.
Do you really think so?
Go and do it now. Otsu's waiting down there at Chinimazuka. Hurry! We'll write a letter to send back to the Shippoji with her head. Then everyone in the village will know our shame has been halved. And when Musashi hears she's dead, his pride will force him to come to us. How glorious! Matachi, hurry up!
You'll wait here, won't you?
No, I'll follow you, but stay out of sight. If Otsu sees me, she'll start whining that I went back on my promise. That would be awkward.
She's only a defenseless woman, said Matachi,
getting up slowly. It's no problem to do away with her, so why don't you wait here? I'll bring her head back. There's nothing to worry about. I won't let her get away.
Well, you can't be too careful. She may only be a woman, but when she sees the blade of your sword, she'll put up a fight.
Stop worrying. There's nothing to it. Bracing himself, he started down the hill, his mother behind him, an anxious look on her face.
Remember, she said, don't let your guard down.
Are you still following me? I thought you were going to stay out of sight.
Chirimazuka is farther down the path.
I know, mother. If you insist on going, go by yourself. I'll wait here.
Why are you hanging back?
She is a human being. It's difficult to attack her when I have the feeling it's like killing an innocent kitten.
I can see your point. No matter how faithless she's been, she was your fiancée. All right. If you don't want me to watch, go by yourself. I'll stay here.
He went silently.
Otsu had first thought of running away, but if she did, all the patience she had exercised in the previous 20 days would come to naught. She decided to bear it a little longer. To pass the time, she thought of Musashi, then Jotaro. Her love for Musashi set millions of bright stars shining in her heart. As if in a dream, she counted the many hopes she had for the future and recalled the vows he had made to her at the pass at Nakayama on Hanada Bridge. Though many years might pass, she believed with all her heart that in the end he would not forsake her. Then the image of Akemi came to haunt her, darkening her hopes and making her uneasy, but only for a moment. Her fears about Akemi were insignificant in comparison with her unbounded confidence in Musashi. She recalled, too, Takuan's saying that she was to be pitied, but that made no sense. How could he regard her self-perpetuating joy in that light? Even now, waiting in this dark, lonely spot for a person she did not want to see, her rapturous dream of the future made any amount of suffering bearable.
Otsu!
Who is it?
She called back.
Hongiden Matahachi.
Matahachi?
She gasped.
Have you forgotten my voice?
No, I recognize it now. Did you see your mother?
Yes, she's waiting for me. You haven't changed, have you? You look just the way you did back in Mimasaka.
Where are you? It's so dark, I can't see.
May I come closer? I've been standing here. I'm so ashamed to face you. What were you thinking about?
Oh, nothing. Nothing in particular.
Were you thinking of me? Not a day has gone by I didn't think of you.
As he slowly approached her, Otsu felt a little apprehensive.
Matahachi, did your mother explain everything to you? Since you've heard everything, she said, immensely relieved. You understand my sentiments, but I'd like to ask you myself to see things from my viewpoint. Let's forget the past. It was never intended to be.
Now, Otsu, don't be like that.
He shook his head. Though he had no idea what his mother had told Otsu, he was fairly certain it had been intended to deceive her.
It hurts me to have the past mentioned. It's difficult for me to hold my head up in front of you. If it were possible to forget, heaven knows I'd be glad to. But for some reason, I can't bear the thought of giving you up.
Matahachi, be sensible. There is nothing between your heart and mine. We're separated by a great valley.
That's true, and more than 5 years have flowed through that valley.
Exactly. Those years will never come back. There's no way to recapture the feelings we once had.
Oh, no. We can recapture them. We can.
No, they're gone forever.
He stared at her, stunned by the coolness in her face and the finality of her tone, asking himself if this was the girl who, when she allowed herself to reveal her passions, was like spring sunlight. He had the feeling he was rubbing a piece of snowy white alabaster. Where had the severity been hidden in the past? He recalled the porch of the Shippoji and how she had sat there with limpid, dreamy eyes, often for half a day or more, silently looking off into space, as though she saw in the clouds mother and father, brothers and sisters. He drew closer, and as timidly as he might have reached among thorns for a white rosebud, whispered, "Let's try again, Otsu. There's no way to bring back 5 years, but let's begin again, now, just the two of us."
"Matahachi," she said dispassionately, "are you imagining things? I wasn't talking about the length of time. I was talking about the abyss that separates our hearts, our lives.
I know that. What I mean is that, beginning right now, I'll win your love back. Maybe I shouldn't say it, but isn't the mistake I made one almost any young man might be guilty of?"
"Talk if you like, but I'll never again be able to take your words seriously."
"Oh, but Otsu, I know I was wrong. I'm a man, but here I am, apologizing to a woman. Don't you understand how difficult that is for me?"
"Stop it! If you're a man, you should act like one."
"But there's nothing in the world more important to me. If you want, I'll get down on my knees and beg forgiveness. I'll give you my oath. I'll swear to anything you wish."
"I don't care what you do."
"Please don't be angry. Look, this is no place to talk. Let's go somewhere else."
"No.
I don't want my mother to find us. Come on, let's go. I can't kill you. I couldn't possibly kill you."
He took her hand, but she wrenched it away from him.
"Don't touch me," she cried angrily. "I'd rather be killed than spend my life with you."
"You won't come with me?"
"No, no, no."
"Is that final?"
"Yes."
"Does that mean you're still in love with Musashi?"
"Yes, I love him. I'll love him throughout this life and the next."
His body trembled.
"That's the wrong thing to say, Otsu."
"Your mother already knows. She said she'd tell you. She promised we could talk it over together and put an end to the past."
"I see. And I suppose Musashi ordered you to find me and tell me that? Is that what happened?"
"No, it is not. Musashi doesn't have to tell me what to do."
"I've got pride too, you know. All men have pride. If that's the way you feel about me..."
"What are you doing?"
she cried.
"I'm as much a man as Musashi, and if it takes my whole life, I'll keep you from him. I won't permit it. Do you hear? I won't permit it."
"And just who are you to give permission?"
"I won't allow you to marry Musashi. Remember, Otsu, it wasn't Musashi you were engaged to."
"You're hardly the one to bring that up."
"But I am. You were promised to me as my bride. Unless I consent, you can't marry anyone."
"You're a coward, Matahachi. I pity you. How can you debase yourself like this? I long ago received letters from you and some woman named Oko breaking our engagement."
"I don't know anything about that. I didn't send any letter. Oko must have done it on her own."
"That's not true. One letter was in your own hand and said I should forget about you and find someone else to marry."
"Where's the letter? Show it to me."
"I don't have it anymore. When Takuan read it, he laughed, then blew his nose on it and threw it away."
"In other words, you have no proof, so nobody is going to believe you. Everybody in the village knows you were engaged to me. I've got all the proof, and you have none. Think, Otsu. If you cut yourself off from everybody else in order to be with Musashi, you'll never be happy. The thought of Oko seems to upset you, but I swear I have absolutely nothing to do with her anymore."
"You're wasting your time."
"You won't listen, even when I apologize?"
"Matahachi, didn't you just now brag that you were a man? Why don't you act like one? No woman is going to lose her heart to a weak, shameless, lying coward. Women don't admire weaklings."
"Watch what you're saying."
"Let me go. You'll tear my sleeve."
You fickle whore."
"Stop it."
"If you won't listen to me, I don't care what happens."
"Matahachi,
If you care about living, swear you'll give up Musashi.
He let go of her sleeve to draw his sword. Once drawn, the sword seemed to take control of him. He was like a man possessed, a wild light in his eyes. Otsu screamed, not so much because of the weapon as because of the way he looked.
You bitch!
He shouted as she turned to flee. His sword descended, grazing the knot of her obi.
I mustn't let her escape,
he thought, and started after her, calling over his shoulder to his mother. Osugi came racing down the hill.
Has he bungled it?
She wondered, drawing her own sword.
She's over there! Catch her, mother!
Called Matachi. But he soon ran back and came to a halt just before colliding with the old woman. Saucer-eyed, he asked,
Where did she go?
You didn't kill her?
No, she got away.
Fool!
Look, she's down below. That's her! There!
Otsu, scampering down a steep bank, had to stop to get her sleeve loose from a branch. She knew she must be near the waterfall because the sound was very loud. As she rushed on, holding her torn sleeve, Matachi and Osugi closed in on her, and when Osugi cried,
We've got her trapped now!
The sound was right behind her. At the bottom of a ravine, the darkness loomed like a wall around Otsu.
Matachi, kill her! There she is, lying on the ground!
Matachi gave himself over to the sword completely. Jumping forward, he aimed at the dark form and brought the blade down savagely.
She-devil!
He screamed. With the cracking of twigs and branches came a screeching death cry.
Take this! And this!
Matachi struck three times, four, again and again, until it seemed the sword would break in two. He was drunk with blood. His eyes spat fire. Then it was over. Silence ensued. Holding the bloody sword listlessly, he returned slowly to his senses, and his face went blank. He looked at his hands and saw the blood on them, felt his face, and there was blood there too, and all over his clothes. He blanched and grew dizzy, sick with the thought that each drop of blood was Otsu's.
Splendid, son! You've finally done it!
Panting more from exhilaration than from exertion, Osugi stood behind him and, leaning over his shoulder, peered down at the torn and battered foliage.
How happy I am to see this, she exulted. We did it, my son. I've been relieved of half my burden. And now I can hold up my head in the village again. What's the matter with you? Quick, cut off her head.
Noticing his queasiness, she laughed.
You don't have any guts. If you can't bring yourself to cut off her head, I'll do it for you. Get out of the way.
He stood stark still until the old woman started toward the bushes, then raised his sword and jabbed the hilt into her shoulder.
Watch what you're doing,
cried Osugi as she stumbled forward.
Have you lost your mind?
Mother!
What?
Strange sounds gurgled from Matahachi's throat. He wiped his eyes with his bloody hands.
I've killed her. I've murdered Otsu.
And it was a praiseworthy deed, too. Why? You're crying.
I can't help it. Oh, you fool! You crazy, fanatic old fool!
Are you sorry?
Yes. Yes! If it hadn't been for you, you ought to be dead by now. I'd have somehow gotten Otsu back. You and your family honor.
Stop your blabbering. If she meant that much to you, why didn't you kill me and protect her?
If I'd been able to do that, I... Could there be anything worse than having a pig-headed maniac for a mother?
Stop carrying on like that. And how dare you speak to me that way?
From now on, I'll live my life the way I want. If I make a mess of it, that's nobody's business but mine.
That's always been a failing of yours, Matahachi. You get excited and make scenes just to cause your mother trouble.
I'll cause you trouble, all right, you old sow. You're a witch. I hate you.
My, my. Isn't he angry? Get out of the way. I'll take Otsu's head, and then I'll teach you a few things.
More talk? I'm not listening.
I want you to take a good look at that girl's head. You'll see then just how pretty she is. I want you to see with your own eyes what a woman is like after she dies. Nothing but bones. I want you to know the folly of passion.
Shut up!
Matachi shook his head violently.
When I think of it, all I've ever wanted was Otsu. When I told myself I couldn't go on as I was, tried to find a way to succeed, start out again on the right path, it was all because I wanted to marry her. It wasn't family honor, and it wasn't for the sake of a horrible old woman.
How long are you going to go on about something that's already finished? You'd do yourself more good chanting sutras. Hail to Amida Buddha!
She fumbled among the broken branches and dry grass, which were liberally sprinkled with blood, then bent some grass over and knelt on it.
Otsu, she said, don't hate me. Now that you're dead, I have no more grudge against you. It was all a matter of necessity. Rest in peace.
She felt around with her left hand and got hold of a mass of black hair. Takuan's voice rang out.
Otsu!
Carried down into the hollow by the dark wind, it seemed as if its source was the trees and the stars themselves.
Have you found her yet?
He called, his voice sounding rather strained.
No, she's not around here.
The keeper of the inn where Osugi and Otsu had been staying wiped the sweat wearily from his brow.
Are you sure you heard right?
Quite sure. After the priest came from Kiyomizudera in the evening, the old lady left suddenly, saying she was going to the hall of the mountain god. The girl was with her.
Both of them folded their arms in thought.
Maybe they went up on the mountain or some place off the main path, said Takuan.
Why are you so worried?
I think Otsu's been tricked.
Is the old woman really that wicked?
No, said Takuan enigmatically. She's a very good woman.
Not from what you told me. Oh, I just remembered something.
What's that?
Today I saw the girl crying in her room.
That may not mean much.
The old woman told us she was her son's bride.
She would say that.
From what you said, it sounds like some terrible hatred made the old woman torment the girl.
Still, that's one thing. And taking her up into the mountains on a dark night is another. I'm afraid Osugi's been planning to murder her.
Murder? How can you say she's a good woman?
Because she is without a doubt what the world calls good. She often goes to Kiyomizudera to worship, doesn't she? And when she's seated before Kannon with her prayer beads in her hand, she must be very close to Kannon in spirit.
I hear she also prays to the Buddha Amida.
There are lots of Buddhists like that in this world. The faithful, they're called. They do something they shouldn't, go to the temple and pray to Amida. They seem to dream up diabolical deeds for Amida to forgive. They'll quite cheerfully strike a man dead, perfectly confident that if they call on Amida afterward, their sins will be absolved and they'll go to the Western Paradise when they die. These good people are something of a problem.
Matahachi looked around fearfully, wondering where the voice had come from.
Hear that, mother?
He asked excitedly.
Do you recognize the voice?
Osugi raised her head, but the interruption did not disturb her greatly. Her hand still grasped the hair. Her sword was poised to strike.
Listen, there it is again.
That's strange. If anybody came looking for Otsu, it'll be that boy named Jotaro.
This is a man's voice.
Yes, I know. And I think I've heard it somewhere before.
This looks bad. Mother, forget about the head. Bring the lantern. Somebody's coming.
This way?
Yes, two men. Come on, let's run.
Danger united mother and son in the twinkling of an eye, but Osugi couldn't tear herself away from her gory task.
"Just a minute," she said. "After coming this far, I'm not going back without the head. If I don't have it, how can I prove I took vengeance on Otsu? I'll be through in no time."
"Oh," he moaned with revulsion. A horrified cry sprang from Osugi's lips. She dropped the head, half stood, staggered, and collapsed on the ground.
"It's not her!"
she screamed. She flailed her arms and tried to stand up, but again fell down. Matahachi jumped forward to look and stammered,
"What? See? It's not Otsu. It's a man. Beggar. Invalid."
"This couldn't be," exclaimed Matahachi. "I know this man."
"What? Some friend of yours?"
"Oh, no. He tricked me into giving him all my money," he blurted out. "What was a dirty swindler like Akakabe Yasoma doing here? So near a temple."
"Who's there?" called Takuan. "Otsu, is that you?"
Suddenly, he was standing right behind them. Matahachi was fleeter of foot than his mother. As he dashed out of sight, Takuan caught up with her and took a firm grip on her collar.
"Just as I thought. And I trust it was your loving son who fled?" "Matahachi! What do you mean by running away and leaving your mother behind, ungrateful lout? Come back here!"
Osugi, though squirming miserably at his knees, had lost none of her spunk.
"Who are you?" she demanded angrily. "What do you want?"
Takuan released her and said,
"Don't you remember me, Granny? You must be getting senile after all."
"Takuan!
Are you surprised?" "I don't see why I should be. A beggar like you, going wherever he pleases. Sooner or later, you were bound to float into Kyoto." "You're right," he agreed with a grin. "It's just as you say. I was roaming about in Koyagyu Valley and Izumi Province, but I came up to the capital and last night at a friend's house heard some disturbing news. I decided it was too important not to act on."
"What does that have to do with me?"
"I thought Otsu would be with you, and I'm looking for her."
"Humph!"
"Granny?"
"What?"
"Where's Otsu?"
"I don't know."
"I don't believe you."
"Sir," said the innkeeper, "blood has been spilled here. It's still fresh."
He moved his lantern closer to the corpse. A stony frown came to Takuan's face. Osugi, seeing him preoccupied, jumped up and started running away. Without moving, the priest shouted,
"Wait! You left home to clear your name, didn't you? Are you going back now with it more sullied than ever? You said you loved your son. Do you plan to desert him now that you've made him miserable?"
The force of his booming voice wrapped itself around Osugi, bringing her to an abrupt halt. Her face distorted by defiant wrinkles, she cried,
"Soiled my family's name, made my son unhappy? What do you mean?"
"Exactly what I said."
"Fool,"
she gave a short, scornful laugh.
"Who are you? You go around eating other people's food, living in other people's temples, relieving your bowels in the open field. What do you know about family honor? What do you know of a mother's love for her son? Have you ever once borne the hardships ordinary people bear? Before telling everybody else how to act, you should try working and feeding yourself, like everybody else."
"You strike a sore spot, and I feel it. There are priests in this world to whom I'd like to say the same thing. I've always said I was no match for you in a battle of words, and I see you still have command of a sharp tongue."
"And I still have important things to do in this world. You needn't think the only thing I can do is talk."
"Never mind that. I want to discuss other matters with you."
"And what might they be?"
"You put Matahachi up to killing Otsu tonight, didn't you? The two of you murdered her, I suspect."
Stretching her wrinkled neck, Osugi laughed contemptuously.
"Takuan, you can carry a lantern through this life, but it won't do you any good unless you open your eyes. What are they anyway? Just holes in your head? Funny ornaments?
Takuan, feeling slightly uneasy, finally turned his attention to the scene of the murder. When he looked up in relief, the old woman said, not without a touch of rancor,